demonization has got to a point where it's intolerable. The vilification of these children is marginalizing them even further. They're coming out worse than what they went in, and we don't want to keep on losing children, not just to adult incarceration, where 70% at least will go on to, and 80% of children aged 10 to 16 who are incarcerated a first time will be incarcerated a second time, and many of those will be incarcerated a third and fourth and fifth time, dozens of times. And that's actually what's been happening. It's getting worse. It's an ongoing crisis. It's probably the world's worst crisis of juvenile detention, what's happening at Banksia Hill. You aren't getting these ongoing riots and rebellion and fighting back anywhere else in the world to the extent that you're getting them at Banksia Hill in Western Australia. Western Australia is becoming fast the Alabama of this continent. And in fact, it is. It is. It's a fair comparison to make when we've got probably the world's worst juvenile detention centre, and that's defined by the response by these children who are going stir crazy in cells. When last year alone, and it's continued on this year, on average, the out time they had from their cells was only 3.5 hours. They were in their cells more than 20 hours on average, all the children on average. And that was across Banksia Hill at Canning Vale in Perth, and also Unit 18 at the maximum security prison of Casuarina, where they've been gazetted to, segregated to, next to Unit 17, which is an adult compound. And they can talk between the compounds, the children with the adults. But 3.5 hours is what they'd been getting out all year across both facilities on average, and that's still a craziness. And what's actually going on, these kids are rebelling and they're fighting back and they're crying out for help. This isn't the way we should treat troubled children. And also the leadership of this state has fallen in a deeper cesspit with its vilification, demonization of these children, denying their, those who are troubled further by neurocognitive impairments, because the the sin of this nation that have left them behind continue to do so. And that's why we stood in solidarity with them on Mother's Day, and we turned the event into a little bit of a carnival atmosphere with ice cream vans and barbecues and marquees. And one child actually came out a little bit later in the day, released after 3 weeks inside, walked out and saw an ice cream van and thought, what's going on? His mother bought him an ice cream. He said he could have an ice cream. And that actually typified to me, these are just children. These are just children.
It was really, really disgraceful to see our Premier Mark McGowan refer to this riot as a form of terrorism. He's also initially described a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder that you know, some of the children in Banksia have, as simply as an excuse. He's told them they've essentially got to get over their loss. It's really quite incredible comments from a state premier, especially when so many people from both the Indigenous and non-Indigenous community are really calling for youth justice reform, when there's been a big campaign around this where, you know, surely people in his own party are encouraging him to reform the youth justice system. Well, how do you explain these sort of comments from someone like Mark McGowan, that he'll see, you know, the as you said there, the clear rebellion of desperate and suffering children, and essentially turn around and say, well, you know, look, this is just these are terrorists in the making, and any problems or disorders they have are just an excuse, and they've got to get over it?
Well, the Premier's got to speak for himself. I can't speak for him. I can only ask questions and ask the same questions that you're actually asking. These questions have to be posed to him, his cabinet, his backbenchers, and the whole parliamentary ensemble. It's actually problematic that these comments are being said, because they're contrary to what he was saying 10 years ago while in opposition, as the leader of the opposition. And when Banksia Hill, there was the riots in 2013, and children had to be removed, or sadly were gazetted and removed to Heike, another adult prison then. And this is the nature of this ongoing crisis. It's a decade and a half long. It's nothing new. Nothing's been done, and that's an indictment of government. But in opposition, he stood up and recognised their neurocognitive impairments, FASD, and actually argued for everything that we're arguing today. So he's done an about-face 10 years later. And this government controls both houses. I don't like to slag individuals. I don't want to slag Mark McGowan. I am disappointed that the leader of the state is talking in such demonising ways and vilification, and you know, invalidating these children, and obviously they're hearing what's being said. and it's being processed in all sorts of various ways, and it perpetuates the wider values of those who have a tough on crime policy, and actually loses all hope. They shouldn't. These children, some of them have given up on the system coming to the fore, or government coming to the fore, and others are crying out for help and hoping for hope. So they've got no hope. Either cash out of children I've just described, whether they've given up or they're hoping for hope. They've got no hope either way. Even those that are hoping are sadly only hoping for hope, and that's the sad indictment of our state. But Mark McGowan's comments, like I said, I don't want to slag anyone. I don't individuate things. I go for systemic repair and the like. But, yeah, they're the poorest of comments. They're contrary to his previous comments. And this government is defined now by its deeds and its actions. It controls both houses. It can decide the future without recourse to any opposition whatsoever. And they obviously don't care enough to support these children when at their most vulnerable. These are the most marginalized and most vulnerable children I've come across anywhere in the country. They live in crushing poverty, but three quarters of them are First Nations, and those who are First Nations, the disproportionality is born of the sins of this nation that's left them behind. The sins of this nation continue today because they're not actually, they're holding him back instead of helping him go forward. So those that have been left behind are now being held back by the sins of contemporary Western Australia. It breaks my heart. It aches the heart. And I don't know what more I can say other than it's been frustrating, this campaign. I've not endured many campaigns, and I've been on multiple campaigns in nearly half a century of my life. We've got we've got many outcomes. We've inroaded. In this one, we haven't inroaded at all whatsoever with the government as a whole. And this is why we've launched the class action. 700 plaintiffs so far. This class action may hit them where it hurts monetarily, and it could be anything between $300 million to $1 billion in compensation they need to pay. But what a way to go about trying to get social reform and compel social reform. What a sad way to go about and make it all about money. But we're hoping that if favourable rulings come across, that they compel social reforms.
Certainly. Now, the government has announced that they will be spending $105 million on improvements to Bankshire Hill. This includes additional services, such as an Aboriginal services unit, additional psychological services, and improving the facilities, including additional crisis care units and so forth. So they have made that announcement, but ostensibly, of course, this government is really it's a bit of sort of band-aid dressing in a way, when, as you mentioned before, systemic repair, systemic reform, systemic change is certainly required in with such a complex, entrenched, intergenerational issue such as youth justice, the issues surrounding poverty, connected, of course, to our worsening housing crisis and the ongoing effects of so many systemic injustices here in Western Australia. What more do you think could the government do just initially in terms of addressing this problem? What's one, some simple things they could do to just make the issue simpler, easier, and just alleviate some of the suffering for the those people that are currently in our juvenile justice system?
I'll preface with the simple solutions, because they are actually simple solutions. It's not actually complex. That's a myth. In the preface, I'd like to say that they've done nothing. They've got nothing in the budget that's meaningful. $105 million that's been committed has been committed over a long while. We keep on getting these spends allocated. They're in terms of forward estimates. A lot of stuff that was supposed to be immediately spent hasn't been spent. Not $1 of that $150 million that's now been aggregated has been spent, or timeline. Not $1. The majority of that money is actually for bricks and mortar upgrades to Bankshire Hill, the single facility right throughout the whole state that all children are transported to in the largest state or jurisdiction in this country, in this continent. And in terms of services, it's minimalist. It's still the same stricture. Very little will benefit by doing much of the same. Services aren't allowed to go about the ways that they know best or aspire to. They're actually restricted to admin areas and by appointment. That's not the way I worked on the inside when I reduced the prison population by more than half of the female compound from 18 to 7 in 8 weeks in 2020 during the pandemic, and it was during the quarantine I was in there with Megan Cracker and my daughter Connie. On the outside doing the supports, we reduced the prison population of females from 18 to 7 in 8 weeks. And the majority of those kids haven't come back, and the children's court supported my safety plans, which were more unique. But we rolled around the compounds. We were allowed to do what we wanted to because the staffing levels were so low with the quarantine in place and in-reach and outreach and internal services that were non-essential workers were quarantined to their homes, and they had the lowest staffing levels. We de-escalated every potential incident, and we at the same time we did a lot of restorative work. So it's not about the guards, and then we need more guards. If we can roll around two people and make a huge difference in 8 weeks, that speaks volumes about what modelling should be like in terms of the therapeutic. What's not on the inside are the simple things that really need to be on the inside. There's nothing transformational, restorative or therapeutic on the inside. These are just buzzwords they're using. These services don't exist. Having some personnel assigned some title and then restricted from what they can do, the contact that they should be making on a more consequential basis, and the rollout of services equivalent to what they'd be on the outside just doesn't occur on the inside. Program's too short for me to go into detail about that, but the therapeutic and the rehabilitative and the restorative does not exist on the inside, and the recreational stuff that's actually espoused that occurs is piecemeal and theatrical for public consumption in terms of public relations. It's just not true. I was on the inside. I saw what's missing, and I saw what happens on the inside, and I saw what doesn't happen on the inside, and that's why I launched the class action thereafter, and that's why Megan Cracker and myself have been blocked by government from continuing on in Banksia Hill. The commissioners had wanted us to continue. The success that we were having was unique. We were supported by them. Al Jazeera came in and did a documentary. The relationship was so great between us and Banksia and the Department of Corrective Services because of the success we were having, that they actually allowed for a documentary an hour long to come in and be made. And then government got in the way because we launched the class action. We couldn't not launch that class action because even if we were to be funded, which we were, we'd be not able to support all the young ones on the inside, and we couldn't have that on our conscience that necessary social reforms that could keep these kids from being railroaded and train wrecked into adult prisons and some to lose their lives as deaths after custody soon after release, that would be on our conscience and blood on our hands for the sake of us silencing our voices to what we saw and what we didn't see on the inside that should have been there. And that silence is not permissible for someone like myself, as you well know me. So we launched a class action to compel social reforms on a sweeping level. Look, it's often been called a problem by some simply, and that Banksia Hill is a First Nations problem of dysfunctionality because of the disproportionality. That's 3 in 4. That's actually got to do with impoverishment, and 60% of First Nations people in Western Australia live below the poverty line, with another 20% in proximity to the poverty line. It's not a black problem, Banksia Hill, and it's not a brown problem. And it's not a white problem. The problem of Banksia Hill is the making of one government after another. It's compassionless and has no financial support on the rehabilitative, the restorative, the cultural for First Nations, and all the things that need to be done, the nurture that should be had, the nurture that should be, you know, if you've got 100 kids on the inside, you actually need 100 nurturers on the inside, similarly so too, mentors, seasoned expertise that can help them turn their lives around. And that would be the greatest possible social investment and social return imaginable. They wouldn't be coming in a second and third and fourth and fifth, and some kids would come in a dozen times in the 1 year. This wouldn't be happening. Age-sensitive content needs to be supported. Desegregation of age needs to be supported. Secure psychosocial facilities for some kids who are a danger to themselves and of harm to others, who need to be supported. They need to be in secure psychosocial facilities, not in these degrading holding pens, corrals of human misery and dungeons. And these facilities need to be demographical. But the greatest bit of prevention is to actually do genuine diversionary programs and even prevention before diversion, where families are in need and that support be invested in. And that support does not happen. We lay claim to these piecemeal supports that get flogged off where some a couple of communities in the remote or the regional in the Perth centrifuge where we've got the majority of young kids, First Nations, three quarters of all the state's First Nations children in Perth alone. The supports don't exist to support struggling families living in public housing, social housing, poverty and overcrowding. We've got transient kids, we've got homeless kids. We just need to put the supports in to address what this, and particularly for First Nations children, where the this has all happened in terms of the principles of proportionality, the disproportionality, the disparity that's now frenzied with the volume of children left behind. And we just need to put in the safety nets and the support. They're not hard. They're not complex. I've worked with a lot of young kids. I've worked with a lot of older youth. We've been able to turn lives around with just the resonance, the rapport, the pathway, the mentoring, which is important to keep their attention within these pathways and with other support services that can actually turn their lives around. And we're not miracle workers. There's many like us. They need to be funded. We have to invest and not do the symbolism and the lying. And now the lying about why we can't invest is condemn these young kids to demonization, vilification, and eventually if we don't prevent these young lives being turned around while they're vulnerable and there's capability for turning them around, they'll finish up in adult prisons and some of them will be caricatured, lampooned and vilified in newspapers and television media as brutal, cruel, evil, monstrous. And we could have avoided all that.